If your state of mind is, as mine is, that you have been put back in a state of nature, then by all means, sign it. Send it to everybody in government that you want to.
Well, here's my thought on it, okay? You have, and I did a YouTube video I have not posted yet about the alleged 3% in America today that would stand up and fight the government and so forth. I don't think there's 3% there. When I take a look at the numbers and so forth, I just don't see it. The thing is that, and you look at the other movements, Tim Turner, Lyndon LaRouche, and so forth. You know, Tim Turner's our new president, right? I don't know if you've seen his.
Yes, I know. He elected himself and got the people that paid to be members to elect him, too.
And he's got a vice president and a secretary of state and all the right people in all the right places. But anyway.
That's what Richard Warren did in Texas back in the 90s, declared himself the Republic of Texas, and he went to prison for it.
and that's what the governments do to people like that. They arrest you and put you in prison because they have the power to do it and so forth. Okay, but I digress here. Okay, so if everybody that had signed this document and say, you know what, the federal government needs to be dissolved as we speak right now. I demand that Obama step down, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, and the rest of those people submit themselves for arrest for future trials of sedition and treason against the United States of America. If every one of those people that signed the document actually meant it and actually were willing to enforce that, then you might be able to start something and start a movement going. Now, here's the thing about movements. They always start with one thing, and then they escalate, and they roll on, and the next thing you know, you've got something that's got teeth. And that's the thing that we're lacking. We don't have what everybody says, there's no teeth. There's nothing behind it. It's an idle threat. There's nothing that's going to take and get notice of these people. And I guarantee you, okay, I like that line in The Untouchables where Sean Connery's talking to Costner. Says that, you know, they put one of you in a hospital, you put one of them in the morgue kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. They bring, you know, 10, you bring 50. They bring 50, you bring 500, right?
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that you need to back up a document like this. But see, that's the problem, is that how do you get that kind of energy going forward? I mean, well, last time sorry to interrupt you, but when I first talked to you, you were talking about acts of, you know, the only way that we're going to do this is there acts of raw, naked, aggressive force, and there's going to be a lot of collateral damage, right?
Well, I don't think I said a lot of, in fact, the entire purpose and the plan is to minimize the collateral damage. I hate that term, and I won't use it to avoid the shedding of innocent blood is what it amounts to.
Yes, that's what it means. It's a politically correct thing for that. A lot of people are going to die that got in the way of bullets and so forth.
Those are political justification of smoozing over murder, really.
Right, but my whole point is, Gary, okay, is that you know, if we sign this dissolution of government, and let's say 1 million, let's say 10 million, okay, let's say there's 3%, that's 10 million, 10.3 million people in the United States, okay? Let's say 10.3 million, and I'll even take it one step below that. Let's just take that and divide that by a third and say that there's only really 100 million people that are legally are capable of making that decision because of their age and their mental state and acuity. So forth, and I think that's a stretch by big money. But the thing is, so let's say 1 million people, that would be, or 3 million people sign this document and send it off to Washington D.C. and says, "Look, you are to cease and desist everything right now. No more EPA, no more DOT, no more TSA. You are ceased and to desist right now and dissolve the federal government because you are not doing your job and you've broken your contract." What are they going to do when they see 3 million signatures on a document like this?
They're going to laugh and maybe pass a law that you'd say you can't use these words in public.
Exactly.
And what would you expect to do? But wait, let me back this up and put it in perspective, okay? This comes at part seven of 10 parts to the plan. I put it out on the internet as a teaser because people who were helping me review this said people need to see this and think about this. Well, that's what it's out there for. It's not out there intending for you to sign it. If you wanted to sign anything, the petition that I mentioned, which you can find on my webpage, is one that I've signed. I sent it to both my senators and my representative here in California last year. Mm-hmm. That's something that you can do, but you do one signature per petition. It's a two-sheet, the two-page one. You do double-sided, sign it, and send it off to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a statement. It's a little bit different than this. This one is designed, modeled more after the Declaration of Independence to be done collectively. But where does this come in the scheme of things? Now, let's look at history. What happened before April 19, 1775? We can go back 5 years from there, 4 years from there, and there were acts of violence. They tarred and feathered people. Quite often people died from it because of the infection. They broke windows. They tore down houses. Hutchinson's house was torn to the ground. They took his work on the history of Massachusetts and spread it all over the street. He never fully recovered all the documents. They tore down tax collector offices. They tore down, physically tore them down. They weren't made as good as they are now. But they tore down warehouses. They even took what would amount to millions of dollars worth of tea and dumped it in the harbor. Yeah. There were acts of violence against people. Now, there was a big difference between then and now. Back then, there was not a standing army. Now, if you understand the concept of a standing army, next time you drive down the street and see a black and white car with red and blue on top, that's a standing army. Mm-hmm. That's the one they feared. So they didn't have a standing army. They only had the British soldiers, and they were subordinate to civil authority in the Boston Massacre. They stood trial because they didn't have permission to shoot. Not that way nowadays. The guy gets a paid vacation if he shoots you. So we have that standing army. So we've got to look at our tactics, but those acts, what I call in the plan, small units, small acts of aggravation.
Yeah.
That people go out and... You can't do it as openly as you did then. Nobody ever identified those Indians.
No.
Nobody ever identified the people that
talked about it. What you're talking about is guerrilla warfare, right?
Yes and no. And I mean, guerrilla warfare is an open and notorious thing. I'm talking about random acts occasionally scattered all over the country to begin demonstrating to government that, goddamn, we're pissed off.
Well,
but you're not going to fortify yourself and go hide in the woods. You're going to get together one night, make sure that no roadside cameras are going to, cover your truck with mud and cover the license plates, whatever you have to do. But go or walk, sneak out and do some act of aggravation. Let them know. Start tarring and feathering.
That's a term. I like that. Active aggravation. I think we should someone should write that down, and that should be a slogan, active aggravation. I like that term.
There's going to be a light version of the plan coming out hopefully later this week, latest next week. I'm trying to get the final proofreading on it done. And it just is an overview in the historical perspective of it. It doesn't go into a lot of the detail, but the overview gives you an idea of what we just talked about.
Yeah.
Now, the second step is, hey, we've been successful. We've done these aggravations. We know that the people in here are not turning us in to the government, so they're clean. We feel a little more secure with our people. So let's get one or two of these cells, maybe three cells together, and do a little bit bigger act of aggravation. Now, let's go back to 1774, 1775 again. We have what happened in Western Massachusetts, which is an article, The End of the Revolution, Beginning of Independence. Tens of thousands of people on the street with rifles telling judges, resign or else. No shots fired. But the judges resigned or fled to Boston and stayed there throughout the war. So they were imposing, intimidating Gage, and Gage didn't know what to do. He had 6,000 troops in Boston, and here's 26,000 people out in Sussex, Massachusetts, and Gage would not send his people out to protect these judges.
Yeah.
Can't do that. We got to find a way around that today.
You know where you start at the TSA? You find out where all the TSA parked their cars and burn all their cars.
Beautiful, because that starts showing...
They can't come to work.
That's fine.
Right? I'm serious.
Wonderful. It is.
You know that. You know they're going to have a special parking lot just for TSA.
It's not just TSA, because the focus is on the whole damn government, not just TA. They're an ideal target.
Mark Kaiser, he's calling for everybody to buy 1 ounce of silver because, you know, J.P. Morgan, you know, is so heavily into the ETFs and so forth. You buy an ounce of silver and you keep silver off the street, they're going to have to do a short. It'll bankrupt them and so forth. I say everybody take your money out of your bank and don't close the account. No. You know what? I'll tell you why you don't close the account. Because just the fact, you know, that
they can keep the records.
Yeah, that costs them money. But you take all your money out, you keep just enough to keep the bank fees up. And then when you need to pay your bills, this is what we do here. You know, we have to go into a town once a month and put in money just to pay for all our bills and so forth. But we keep all the money at home and so forth, okay?
Well, businesses have been doing that for years. It's called a zero balance account. When they write checks, they write one to the bank to cover all the checks they just put in.
Right. But the thing is that, you know, you take all your cash out of the banks, there's not enough cash to cover that level of cash right now in the United Continental. There's not, right? That would cause, I would call a systemic crash of the banking system, and they would have to shut the banking system down. And then you effectively have put a stop act on the government if they shut the bank.
Or flood it. Or they would flood it. Now, if you go to St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank page, you will see how much money they printed in 2007.
Yeah.
It went over three times in just this short period of time. It jerked up to over three times the money in circulation prior to that. As near as I can tell, they've only put out about 7% of that increase. I think it was $700 trillion. But they've only put out 7%, but they've got that cash already. So I don't know if that would be effective or not. So that, you know, that might or might not. But if they fuel the system, all they're going to do is force on us a massive inflation.
Well, Bernanke's already doing that. They're already going to do that. I mean,
they are. So why waste our time in moving that along quicker? Because that's going to push us towards chaos. And this plan is kind of designed around trying to avoid that chaos as much as possible. You can't avoid it in big cities. But
well, see, that's just it. I don't see. Okay, I think you're going to have chaos, and then you're going to get order out of the chaos. Okay. Because I don't think that you can enact any change at this point without some kind of chaotic activity.
Well, you know, I disagree with you on that. But let's get back on point on this. You were talking about 3%. It's an interesting number. How many people were involved on April 19th? Infinitesimal amount.
Well, that's my point. That, you know, I mean, you got these guys.
Wait. Let me finish here. Okay. Let's look at what happened. There's a movie called April Morning, if you can find it. It's a wonderful movie. I've got the book. It's great because I've got some letters from the period where people, we hope we don't have to go to war, but we're willing to, or I'm not going to war against the crown. The attitude back then was, we're not going to do it. But then something happened on April 19th that began involving all the other countries, not just Western Massachusetts. And remember, Lexington and Concord are on the eastern fringe of Western Massachusetts. But something happened, and all of a sudden, all these people that were sitting on the fence got off the fence. Now, we're primed in this country right now for a heck of a lot of people to get off on our side of the fence. Now, this whole plan, by staging up the way we are with the plan, is to give people the opportunity to step on our side of the fence. They see they've got to make a decision, and there's another aspect to it as well, and that is, with this information known, what we're looking for, the government knows that. So at any time, they can say, okay, we give up, we will follow the dictate of the people and operate in accordance with the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So we push slowly, but as we push slowly, there are a number of things that happen to enhance our side. So the first one is that small unit acts of aggravation. The second is units joined together in small regions, say counties, for greater acts of aggravation. The next step is connections created between county elements, offensive and defensive. Okay, this is where the militia, third step, where the militia actually for the first time has a part, and it's more defensive than anything, but hey, if you got a little holdout in your county, then you become offensive to them. Next step, coordinated efforts, securing facilities, and allegiances and prisoners. So now we're starting to act as a government. Next step, institution of governmental elements. That's where we start taking counties and incorporating constitutional governments. Next step, continuation of flow of goods, utilities, and communications. Now, it won't work in L.A., but at this point, you start making sure the food flows, the gasoline flows, the sewer works, the water comes out of the spigot, the electricity comes, the phones work. And we become now the ones that are making sure that what we call public services stay operational. We take over the facilities. We keep the good people. We kick the bad out. We use militia or other volunteers people to go to work there as necessary to make sure that we minimize the chaos. And chaos comes when there's an absence of something. It could be if you don't have water in your tap. It could be if you don't have electricity. It could be if there's not food on the grocery store shelves. Those are the sources of chaos. So at this point, when we get to the county level, we start assuring to the extent that we're able to, and this keeps growing as we grow, that the continuation of these services minimizing it. Now, screw Los Angeles. Los Angeles, you put a perimeter around it and say if you're not an American citizen, go stop on 5 and don't stop until you get the border. You leave the interstate, you're going to get shot. Anybody else who wants to come out and join us, come on out. But you can't deal with a big city on this level. You know, it's up to them to keep their stuff. And if they get nasty and aggressive, hey, you've got them under siege. What happens under siege? You've got to have resupply. What happens if you don't let them resupply? Eventually, they'll collapse.
Yeah.
But,
well,
you know,
well, okay,
you
so let's back up a little bit. You were talking about, you know, how many people on April 19th. I'm assuming you're talking about the shot that was heard around the world and so forth.
All of a sudden.
The 3%, that number comes from historians and pseudo-historians who say that during the Revolutionary War, that there really was only 3% of the population that fought that war. And that's a pretty accurate number and so forth. And so there are people that call themselves the 3%ers because they're going to take that, you know, even though I don't think there's 3% of the people that will do anything for whatever reasons and so forth. But, you know, even in I'll use Cuba for a classic example, okay? In Cuba, it only took a couple thousand people to initiate that regime change in Cuba, okay, because of the way they operated, which they're operating, you know, the same philosophy that you're talking about, you know, active aggravation and so forth. And you know, they went through it. You know, the United States sent, you know, soldiers and spooks and so forth, but they failed miserably because they, just like they did in Vietnam, they underestimated the resolve and the will of the individuals that were willing to fight the battle and so forth. And that's one of the things that I always question is the resolve and will of the people that are willing to fight and so forth. Gary, we got to take a break. Let's take a short break, and we'll be back in a couple, 3 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Trust in me, baby. Give me time, give me time. Give me time. Somebody say, the old or the gray, sweet or the wine, sweet or the wine. Oh, my love is like a sea, baby. Just needs time to grow. It's going stronger day by day. As it cries. Give me time, give me time.
Okay, we're back with Gary here. I see that some people wanted to rehear the question, so I'm going to restate it for you. And the statement is, which person said this? It's a great compliment to me to have two movies about me with two great actors, and they still fucked the deal up. Which person said that? All right, Gary. Let's continue on. Okay, so
Now we're talking about people, you know, sitting on the fence. I mean, they were concerned about what the British were doing. Even Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Massachusetts primarily. But I've got the minutes of the Albany, New York Committee of Safety, and on April 26th, apparently the first acknowledgement of receiving word of what had happened, they received a letter from Pittsfield dated the 25th. They don't say what was in the letter, but they do include their entire response. So the response letter, Albany, 26 April, 1775. Gentlemen, we received your letter of the 25th instant, and the same being taken into consideration by a few members of the subcommittee of correspondence, it was resolved that it be answered. We are extremely sorry to find that the King's troops have commenced hostilities against your province. We as a subcommittee, not being full, cannot take upon us to answer that part of your letter requesting assistance, being a matter of the greatest importance, which matter to be left to a future day when the sense of the county can be taken. And as to your fears of the inhabitants of Kinderhook taking up arms against you, we look upon that as entirely groundless. We are, gentlemen, your most humble servants, by order of the committee, John Ann Blaker. So here, a week after Lexington and Concord in New York, not that very far away, the word had gotten about what happened in Massachusetts, and they're just, you know, that's groundless. You know, it's bullshit. It's not happening. Now, later on in those minutes, you start seeing them commissioning officers, increasing training, buying ball and shot for the militia, start seeing them doing all these things in preparation of war and then sending their troops to join the requisitions by the state and later the requisitions by the county. So the transition into involvement came with the recognized reality. They had no recognized reality. You know, it's groundless. They thought it was a one-time event, just an episode. Apparently they hadn't heard what was happening around Boston at the time, but that's what I looked at and see the slow transition before we finally got that 3% or however many it was. It took a long time before most people would join in and participate in the activities.
But we
so
had, we,
that
we
transition
already,
comes
we
from the reality that there's something happening. That happening is a crux in our history. We're going to go this way or that way. Which way do we want to go? I'm going this way. That's slow in coming. That's a commitment.
Okay, so let me ask you. Let me bring a point in. Palm Beach Sheriff, Palm County Sheriff, said that anybody who refuses to scan or refuses to pat down, they will arrest. Okay. Now they obviously got a ton of DHS money or something like that. But you know, so here's a person who says that, you know what, I changed my mind, I don't want to fly. Guess what? They're saying that when you go into that building, that airport, and you go into that gate, you don't have a choice. You either get scanned or you get groped or you go to jail, right? Okay. Now, how unconstitutional is that, and how infuriating is that to anybody who is a constitutionalist and someone who you know lives, eats, and breathes the Constitution and so forth, as far as you know on the Fourth Amendment rights and so forth. And the thing is that what's the repercussions that should fall amongst the Sheriff's Department for doing that?
I can't speak directly to that. You know, that you can't go attack the Sheriff's Department. You just put him
Why
on
not?
Your shit list.
Why not? They're attacking you.
How about enforce? I mean, if the sheriff dies of a sudden case of lead poisoning in the middle of the night, then it's become something that, hey, that's a shame. But let's look at what the sheriff did. He wanted to throw people in jail for changing their mind about flying. You mean we're forced to fly if we buy a ticket?
No, you're not forced to fly, because what happens is that after they do all that bullshit to you, they rip your ticket up and they say, guess what, you don't get to fly anyway.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, you buy a ticket, you decide you don't want to fly, and all of a sudden you can end up in jail. Or one article I read, they're trying to get an $11,000 fine. I don't know if that's one state or not.
That's part of it.
This shit?
Well, that's my point. The point I'm making is that that's the level that they've gone to. Now, this is just one county. You know, the opposite of that is that the district attorney in San Francisco, actually not San Francisco, San Mateo County, is saying that any, you know, malfeasance, that he will prosecute and so forth. I don't know, if his words got any iron in it, or if he just, you know. But the thing is that the arrogance of a sheriff to say that I will support the THS and arrest any, or TSA, and arrest anybody that refuses a pat down or refuses a scan, even if they want to walk out of the fucking airport and say, I don't want to do this, I'm going to take a train, I'm going to get a refund. Okay. That's the problem. That's where we're at. Okay. That is not so unsimilar as the level of abuse that our forefathers were facing in the late 1700s. Don't you agree? That's what drove them to the revolution.
I agree, but the thing is, we can't be baited into open confrontation. The whole idea of aggravation is this, that that sheriff dies of lead poisoning in the middle of the night, instant case of lead poisoning in the middle of the night. The Patriot Press now says, oh, Sheriff John Doe died last night of an instant case of lead poisoning. We regret the loss to the county and to his family. However, let's look at the record of Sheriff John Doe. Sheriff John Doe is the one that incarcerated 13 people for refusing to go through the grope and changing their mind about flying. You start listing all the bad things. Praise me at first. Say all the bad things. And as I pointed out in a couple articles, I learned at Waco and I've learned since then that the press, if given an opportunity to have two sides, will consider at least the second side. Most of the press will. I mean, I dealt with Rita Cosby for a little bit shortly before Tim McVeigh's execution. She and I were corresponding and talking on the phone. And she opened up. Once she got some information, she started taking the non-establishment side on that whole picture. Mm-hmm. I've seen it happen in other cases. So if we put out what the bad is, it's very possible that these idiots that can't even speak good English on television will start pointing out that, you know, we're getting these reports, so that this is what the guy did. Well, that now starts to balance this, and it enhances the reality that there's some pissed off people, and there's going to be some other people dying of instant cases of lead poisoning in the middle of the night. So we play it to our side.
That's the problem. There is no fear of retribution, and that's why when you have no fear of retribution, you pretty much, you know, you do what you want with impunity and so forth. Now, I gotta tell you something that really upset me is two nights ago, I was on Scarbo, Joe Scarbo, and Pat Buchanan, you know, and this is the level of the intelligence. The guy was saying that how important these things are because they, you know, because it the scanners show what's inside a person's body. I'm going, you fucking idiot! You don't understand. It says X-ray machines can't see what's inside your body. That's what MRIs are for. So for it, someone can have a charger up his ass with 12 ounces of Semtec, and you wouldn't know it, right? You wouldn't know it unless you ran a guy through, unless you either you stuck your finger up his bunghole or you ran it through an MRI. You wouldn't know it was up there. Same thing for a woman. You can't do cavities with an X-ray machine because if you've got that kind of power, the minute that person goes through there, it's going to fry his skin and so forth. But the thing is that this is Pat Buchanan, a person of notoriety, say, is coming up with this off comment saying how these things can do cavity searches and so forth. I'm just going, Jesus Christ Almighty, Mary and Joseph, you know. And that's what's going to happen next. What's going to happen next is they're going to get someone that either is, that's got surgically inside himself an explosive device, or like they do, like there was a real interesting documentary about Devil's Island, how the French prisoners used to use chargers, which is what convicts use to smuggle goods in and out of, and they put all of their stuff in a charger. And then we're talking something that's not very large. It's about the size of a cigar tube in diameter and maybe about an inch and a half long and so forth. And they put all their money and all their goods and everything in that little charger and so forth, and they put it up their rectum, and that's where they kept it for the voyage up through, from France to French Guiana. But that charger can hold enough Semtec to blow a hole in any airplane. Right now, if a person is willing to set his crotch on fire to explode an airplane, do you think someone is willing to stick 12 ounces of Semtec up his ass to blow up a plane? You bet your.
Look at how much heroin people swallow too. I mean, there's any number of ways. If you swallowed Semtec in a plastic bag and had a little transmitter, and your watch was the transmitter, and the receiver was in the Semtec. I mean, when you're looking for your 40 virgins, your intention is to die. In fact, I watched the end of World War II the other day. After the peace was signed, an officer and five kamikaze pilots took their planes off, headed for the American fleet. They were never seen again. They weren't shot down. Yeah. Their commitment to die had been made. They chose to die.
Yeah.
When somebody has made the decision to die doing something, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And yes, swallowing Semtec, sticking it up his ass, hey, they might even cut off one lung and give him what appears to be a pacemaker. Now, what can they do about that?
Well,
but it could be the other lung could be filled with Semtec.
The point is that these checks are worthless and meaningless.
It's stupid.
Because the people, event they want to blow up the building or to blow up the plane, they are so far ahead of us, and that's what we're catching. But the whole thing is that they are worthless. They aren't pure, raw, unadulterated stupidity, and yet they're doing this, and what they're doing is that they're infringing on our rights doing it, and they're making people absolutely miserable. I mean, you know, I guess there's a lot of TSA members out there that aren't really enthralled about having to stick their hand in someone's pants and stuff like that and so forth. But the thing is that the whole thing is so whacked out because guys like Chertoff and so forth are getting paid for consulting with the company that makes these scanners and so forth. No, by the way, he was the one that recommended this is what we need to do as he was leaving. And of course, you got Napolitano, who's got probably the IQ of a warm summer day. Says, oh yeah, that's a good idea and so forth. But what it's taken is it's taken this to the only word that I could come that comes close to this is absurd. It's just absurd what they're doing.
Oh, it is. You know, there's a simple solution. And let's just say you live in a small town and there's a bank robbery and it was the identification is a Negro, a male Negro. And the police start stopping people. They can't profile. So some white guy says, well, why'd you stop me? Well, there's 13% Negroes in this community, so we've got to stop 7 white guys for each black.
Hello? Gary, did I lose you? Well, I think we lost Gary. Let's see if he's still on Skype. Hello, Gary. Hold on, folks. We lost Gary. Let me, I'll put on some music here. Let's see if I can get him back up. Gary. He's back online. Let me,
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please leave a message after the beep.
Well. Well, we can't get Gary, so I wonder if he's got... No, he lives in the mountains, too, so he might be having some internet problems. So we'll wait for him to call back. You know what? Let's call Freebird and see what the hell he's doing. Oop, hold on. Gary's calling. Are you Gary?
Yes, I'm Gary. I'm on the... Skype has been doing that to me lately.
Okay. All right, so we kind of lost you about the profiling of a black person in a small-town robbery.
Okay, now, black town's got 13% black population, so cop stops a white guy, and the white guy says, well, the robber was a black man. Why are you stopping me? Oh, well, it's quotas. We've got 13% black people, so 7 out of 8 people that we stop have to be white because we have to meet the quota. We cannot profile. That's how absurd this is. 99% of the people that are going to do something on an airplane can be profiled and identified and not have subject little kids
yeah.
who've been told.
You think about it, you go, you know, you got that lady that's 89 years old and she's in a walker and so forth. She probably has no ambitions about blowing an airplane up, so forth. You know,
right.
And that's the absurdity of it.
He had to pull his pants off because of his official knee.
Yeah, yeah. How about the guy that he said he was going to get patted down, so he just took his pants off and he says, okay, here, check it out. I don't got nothing to hide. And they said, no, you have to put your pants back on so we can search you. Absurd, right?
Back to the plan, though. You know, in targeting people, you got to get the guy that did this to the kid or did this to the old lady. You have to make sure when you target somebody under the plan, and in the plan, the full-blown version is very detailed in what you have to look for when you target somebody, and then you have to provide the information that you've researched so that the Patriot Press can pick up the banner on it. So you can't just pick somebody in TSA, because I remember going through Las Vegas once many years ago, but it was 2000, I think, and they had started the security. And I'm walking down this one concourse, and my next flight is going on the next concourse over. And I get to the balcony, and I look down and see hundreds of people. You can't even define the lines. And so I walk back to this double door that goes on a pathway over to the other concourse. TSA lady was real nice. I said, look, I can go down there and stand in line, perhaps miss my flight, and put additional burden on those TSA people down there, or you can let me go across here. And she let me go across. So there are good people in TSA. I would guess a small percentage. So if somebody's going to target somebody in TSA, they need to be sure that they've got somebody that can be identified as being one of these abusive ones. And that's the whole thing on when you target. You've got to make sure of your target. We cannot get a bad name for the Patriot community as the plan is implemented. So if we're going to take retaliatory action, it can't be an open confrontation. It has to be specific and an identified target that we can positively identify as bad guy.
So I got a question for you.
Yeah, we're acting as judge, jury, and executioner.
How are you going to fund all this? How are we going to fund it?
Well, that comes about the third level when the Commission of Safety and the militia start coming into
together.
An active part. The first two parts, they're acting totally defensively. But I'll tell you what happened in Western Massachusetts. In Worcester County, they and a number of other counties, they instructed the tax collector that you, when you receive funds, you don't send them where they're supposed to go, you give them to us. You got it? And they did. Now, we work in an electronic system here, and it might be a little more difficult, but we have to deal with that. You know, to issue a check, I'm going to take it down to the bank and get the cash, whatever we have to. Now, as it starts expanding, and we take over, say, a county, and there's a welfare office down there on the corner. Well, sorry, people, you're unemployed. Welfare is not constitutional. We've got this building now. Do you want to lease or sell it? There are ways. As you take over each element of government, you gain access to their bank account. You gain access to their facilities. And believe me, there's a lot of surplus facilities. So if somebody wants to rent it, hey, we got revenue.
Yeah.
If necessary, there are 9 Federal Reserve banks in this country. I'm not saying that bank robbery is the solution, but I think it's the last resort. But it's also possible that once you get approaching state level, that state needs to issue a script, a continental currency, redeemable in the future when we get enough control to be able to cover these expenses. So we're going to emulate what was done 200 years ago.
Well, 200 years ago, we were screwed until the French came up and decided they'd like to get a piece of the British.
Yeah, so we lived in a country that had no specie circulating hardly. You know, in the country, a guy might not see a dollar in his whole lifetime.
Yeah.
In Boston, the guy, you know, having $50 for most people.
Okay, let's go back to the 3%, okay? So I don't think there's 3% of the American population that are going to do that. I think it's like it's less than 1% and so forth, okay?
Well, I don't know if you need more than 3 million people to do it.
If you could find 3, I always, I've made a case of that, you know, if I could get 10,000 people armed that are committed, I could change this country.
Yeah. If you went out right now to get, let me tell you a story about my parents. When I didn't pay my taxes, when I was back talking to them, they were trying to get me to pay my taxes. They said, well, we agree with you on the income tax, and, you know, if everybody stops paying taxes, we'll stop too. You're not going to get them all at once, and that's the whole point that I'm trying to make. They didn't start with 3%. They started with 76 guys on Lexington Green, and all of a sudden they were up to about 2,000 people surrounding Boston. These were pissed off people, but that's all they had. And for a long time, they didn't get much more than that.
Yeah.
But as the reality of the situation became apparent to more and more people, people had a choice. Am I going to go with the crown? Am I going to go with the colonists?
Well,
and those are the fence sitters that might eventually, when they realize that they're going to get caught up in this thing, no ifs, ands, or buts. For example, when we start saying people that are inimical to the cause of liberty, and we take away their rifles and their guns, and maybe even put them in jail, people are going to start thinking. Now, if they're willing to take the loyalty oath, they can join us. If they're not, they might end up in jail too.
I saw something on a YouTube channel that was, it might have been a couple years old, but it disgusted me to no end. It was in Florida. It was a homeless encampment underneath the freeways, and the cops came in there with knives and cut these people's tents up. It was disgusting.
Yeah.
It disgusted me to no end. It's like, you know, these are people that are evicted from their homes. They have nothing. This is all they have. Why would you cut that person's shelter up? So granted, it's Florida. You know, you don't get minus 20 degrees in Florida. Last time that happened, all the Indians got on their knees and started praying. But the thing is that why would you do that? What kind of sick, sadistic individual will get kind of any kind of enjoyment out of cutting a person's tent up with his pocket knife or with his buck knife, where he no longer could use it for shelter and so forth, because he refused to leave because he didn't have a home and he was living underneath the on-ramps underneath the freeways, and it might be an eyesore for the tourists and so forth, which is the reason why they were being evicted.
Well, I don't know if you've seen that recent video. Somehow somebody got a hold of the security camera, but this lady had some contact lens solution in her purse or something going through security. And she said, oh, that's my contact lens solution. You can throw it away. And some guy comes up behind her, grabs her just on the lower chest, pulls her back, turns her around, and throws her on the floor, and then three or four TSA guys grab her and pick her up and take her over to the metal table, and the one guy that pulled her back in the first place takes his forearm and jams her head against the table. It's all on video. When you give people power, they assert that power if it's not controlled somehow. And there is no safeguard on our side in any branch of government. And it's demonstrated most by the police department. If you shoot a cop, you'll probably get the electric chair. If a cop shoots you, he will get paid vacation and then acquitted. He'll get time off with pay, and then it'll be determined justifiable homicide. When you give the power to the people that belong to the king can do whatever he wants. And those people that work for him, the courts will protect them because they protect the courts. That's what's gone wrong in this country.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. All right, we're at the top of the hour. Let's take another break. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. Hang in there. Don't go anywhere. We still have at least 45 minutes to go.
Hollywood, I
Okay, we're back. So, where did we leave off?
Well, let me pick this up. You know, state of mind becomes very important. And if we go into this, there's always the possibility that we're going to fail. That means it's probably going to cost us our lives. That's what the founders realized, especially Hancock and Adams. But if we go into this, we've got to go in with a degree of optimism that we can win, number one, and number two, that the people will come to us. How many Tea Partiers, the younger ones, will join us? Even the older ones will give us places to hide, perhaps provide money, ammunition, food. We've got to go in not thinking these people won't join us, because if they sense that we don't think they're going to join them or we're better than them because we're doing it and they're not going to join us. So we have to go in expecting that the people that realize the government's gone astray are going to join us somewhere along the line, and we need to keep that image in front of them. The door is always open to join our side, and the plan makes that very clear. Do not offend people.
Well,
it's very important.
You know,
this is the only place in my lifetime where hearts and minds really has a significance. It didn't work in Vietnam, it ain't working in Afghanistan, but in this country, it has to be a major element of our concern because this is our country.
Right. No, I hear what you're saying, but I think that one of the biggest problems we have, there's no continuity in the Patriot movement, and certainly not a continuity in the alternate news society, because, you know, from Alex Jones on the top to you know, dickwads like Doc at the FM dot whatever, Watchman.fm, you know, all these people expound from day one is what's wrong, look what happened here, look what happened there, but no one is willing to stand up on top of the tree stump or the soapbox and say, okay, this is what we got to do, other than you and me and you know, a few others, Freebird and so forth. So, you know, and that's a big problem, and that's what we need to do, is we need to in order to turn the tide to get people to take action, we need to start offering up, hey, this is what you do, this is how you start engendering change. Now, the Tea Party, I think the Tea Party was a great start until it got corrupted by guys like Murdoch.
The money came in,
right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the thing is that, you know, and then when the money came in, and then basically, you know, they turned it to their distinction and distraction and so forth. It took away from the purity of the movement and so forth. Okay, now amongst us, the people that want to affect change and go back to the basics. Okay, and one of the things that I have to talk about is that, you know, there is nothing that's going to change the direction that we're going other than violence. Okay.
Us.
You know, but the thing is that a lot of people are afraid to take that first step because there's too much that they have, that they think they have to lose. And it'll basically be to the point where, well, look what happened to the Jews in World War, you know, where there are Hitler's Germany and so forth. They were afraid to enact change, except for a few people and so forth. And that's the message that we need to give. We need to get out there, is that don't be afraid to enact change. But the thing is, it's all about what is it that you have to lose? Are you going to lose your freedom? Are you going to lose your comfortable lifestyle and so forth? Because as we go further and further and further, and they erode everything, erode our freedoms and so forth, one day you wake up and you realize that you're in a slave camp, basically. You've become so enslaved where you can't affect change and so forth. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, you know, we are losing until we take the initiative. That's fundamentals. If you've got military experience, without taking the initiative, you're going to lose. And that's what this plan is all about. I mean, people talk about the confrontation when they come to get my guns. Well, that's your last stand. You're out of the fight from then on when they come to get your guns. You might take some with you. We're not going to, we can't stand an open confrontation because, right now, if you have a weapon worth firing, it's illegal. So the only course we have, what do we have? We have the tactics of hit and run, sneak attacks, things like that. That's the tactic. Is there risk involved? Yes, those guys that tarred and feathered people, if they were caught, they would have been hung. The people that dumped the tea in the harbor or tore buildings down, if they were caught, they would have been hung.
So how do you...
They took the risk.
How do you get the movement?
People to work together.
Okay, so we have a radio station, we have your show and so forth, and there's Freedom Eyes.
Well, I want to add one name to your list of people that are willing to talk out. Randy Mack has had me on his program a number of times to talk about this too, and you know I've been invited to G-Man show. There was another one I was on. So, you know, it's not just one. Now, the problem we have is getting together. Now, I'm working on, I hope, a solution. Maybe in a couple, 3 weeks, I'll have the page put together. When I do, Joe, I'll let you be one of the first ones to know in case you want to do a program on it. That I think there's a way we can get together. And, again, this is coming from what I've learned from history. I'm a student of history. I love it. I buy old books whenever I can. And they overcame these obstacles. I read you that you guys are joking. That's not serious. They're not going to attack you. That attitude was prevalent to some degree then. Mm-hmm. It wasn't open and notorious like it is here because letters took days to get somewhere. There were no telephones. So there's more active infighting amongst us now because it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
But I've got an idea for a forum that will dissipate that and show us that we can work together.
Yeah.
And like I say, in 2 or 3 weeks, I hope that we'll break ground.
Well, you know, let me take a lesson. You're a student in history. Let's take a lesson in Vietnam. You were there. I was there.
Yeah.
The French, the UN, and the Americans expected the Vietnamese just to roll over, lay down their guns, and hold their hands up and say, oh my gosh, the Americans are here. We can't win. And that didn't happen. And when it didn't happen, we got really upset and said, okay, let's just bomb the shit out of everybody. And they still wouldn't roll over, right? And what it did is it intensified their fortitude not to cave in to the capitalist devils and so forth, just like Iran did. Now, I am not saying that what happened there was right, what they did was right. I'm not saying what the Iranians did. But the thing is that they did not cave in. And they refuse to cave in. And that's one of the things that we need to do, is we need to get into a situation where we have enough people that won't cave in.
Let me give you a little irony. I'm going to go to the most recent one, the currently active one, Afghanistan. You've probably seen videos where press people or independents have gone out and worked with an Afghan team and setting IEDs or, you know, we call ours mines, we call theirs IEDs because it sounds more sinister.
Yeah.
But these people, if you listen to what they're saying is these people are coming in our country just like the Russians did. Now, wait, stop. Let's think a minute. Red Dawn, the movie, you're familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
There's a remake coming out of it now.
No, they ran out of money, and then MGM went bankrupt, yeah.
But let's think about Red Dawn and how we applauded those young guys because our country was being invaded, and they did everything they could to defend their country.
Yeah.
Isn't that what the Afghanis did? Isn't that what the Iraqis did? In fact,
that's the whole point.
Friends of enemies. Vietnam, the same thing.
Yeah, it's like, who are you to come into my nation or my country and attack me and kill civilians and kill innocent, you know, women and children and so forth? Who are you to do that? But the thing is that this is different, okay? Now, the difference I see between 1776 and 2010 is that in 1776 it was America, the colonies, against the great evil, which was the British Empire.
No, it was British subjects against British subjects.
Well, but see, that's just it. Is that when they signed the Declaration of Independence, they separated themselves from Britain. They said, we are no longer British. Right?
But remember, that comes to step 7.
Right. But the thing is that where are we now?
Where are we now?
We're
before step one of the plan. We're right now. Sam Adams, I don't know if you ever read Into the Revolution, Beginning of Independence. It's a rather long article. But in there, I lead it off with what John Adams said to Thomas Jefferson in 1815, 1816, somewhere along the line. And he said the revolution was that period 10 years before Lexington and Concord. That was when the minds were changing in the people. Lexington and Concord was only the culmination of the revolution, and then we began the war.
So that's where we are now.
We're in that revolution right now.
Would you not say that Waco could be construed as the same as a Lexington or Concord?
17 years I have been waiting for us to rise up against the government.
Okay.
It hasn't happened. I've been asking people that say there's a peaceful solution. What is it? Well, voting. Well, I'll tell you what. You give me a benchmark and a timeline. And when what you expect to accomplish by when, so that you can see if you're being successful. Nobody could.
Yeah.
Now, everybody had this idea of a violent confrontation, but generally it was when they come to get my guns. We can't line up in a line against them. And it wasn't until really last year when I wrote Unlike Any Other Government that I really started thinking, is there a most peaceful solution we can pursue, which is what this whole plan is developed on? Yes, we can. But we need a plan, and it's not an open line, front line confrontation, and not defending my guns until I'm dead.
Well,
so what comes in between?
Go ahead.
What? So we have to find something where some people that are brave enough to tear down Hutchinson's house, dump tea in the harbor, tar and feather people, is willing to go out and do the acts we can under the current circumstances, the modern technology, to begin that aggravation and start forcing the reality on the rest of the people that something's happening somewhere along the line, wherever it is, people will decide what side they're on. Some might change sides somewhere along the line, but for the most part, people will decide what side they're on. Now, going back to the numbers in the colonial period, the estimates are roughly 30% supported the revolution, though they weren't active participants. 30% were stood by the king, and 30% were stayed on the middle of the fence.
Yeah, they were neutral, undecided.
From a political standpoint.
Yeah.
That may be true here today, but I think that we have been more disabused than the colonists were by a long shot, and it's just getting worse. I mean, the TSA is just the next line, but we keep talking about problems. We don't talk about solutions. When are we going to realize how bad it is? These people that are upset about TSA, they're adding to our numbers because a lot of those people are going to say, we do have to settle this when it gets to the point of I've got to decide which side I'm on. So I think potentially we might be able to count in much higher numbers than you expect as long as we keep the door open. We play to hearts and minds, and we roll along trying to have detrimental effect on the general population as little as possible. For example, if you're going to take out a power station, find the transformer station that's closest to where the government has a large facility that's dependent on that, so you'll have the least effect on other populations. Some people are going to be inconvenienced. But if you take out just randomly, oh, there's a big one, it's easy to get to, let's go after that, like McVeigh did, then you got a problem because you piss a lot of people off. But if you go to that one that's down right, you know, just down the road from this, a missile production facility, Hughes or Martin Marietta or something like that, and take that out, you're going to have minimum effect, but you're going to have a maximum effect against the other side because they're going to stop production until they get that fixed. So if we use the thought process
now, what if you just started taking out Federal Reserve? There's the 9 Federal Reserve. Why don't you just start taking out Federal Reserve buildings?
Well, McVeigh chose the Marat building because it was not built in the terrorist-proof design.
Yeah.
If you go to the Huey building in Orlando, Florida, for example, you can't get a vehicle close to that thing. The bottom wall is sloped up. There's no windows less than about 12 feet off the ground. You know, it's basically got deflectors, vehicle barriers, and everything. Marat building didn't have those. They had glass, glass, right there at the street. And so he chose that side to attack.
Well, it was an office building. You know, it was where people did office style work.
Right, and it, so it was an easy target. So the Federal Reserve Bank,
you know, in the Patriot Act, in the executive orders, if martial law is declared, the first thing that happens is that the special forces units go to the Federal Reserve banks to protect the Federal Reserve because they know that's the first place that people are going to go. They're going to attack.
Then we find out if both keepers work, don't we?
Yeah, I don't. You know what? If I had to trust my life on on him. So, but
me
but
too. I have little faith in Oath Keepers.
No, because the whole idea you become. Man, I don't want to get into that. So anyway, so you know, we're still talking about Axis Edition and so forth, at least in the eyes. Now look what happened to the Hatari. Okay. Of course, they were stupid. They put it on the videos. Of course, it's not like we're not putting it on the air that everybody can hear what we're talking about. But they put it on the videos about, you know, things that they were going to do and so forth. And, you know, they're still sitting in the slam. But the thing is that in order to facilitate this, okay, this is the problem, is the logistics, the financing, and the orchestration and organization of that. How do you facilitate this? I mean, I'm with you 100%. You know what? The federal government's got to go, okay? And if it takes the burning of a couple buildings and a tar feathering, you know what? I would love to get Schwarzenegger and burn and tar and feather that asshole. I mean, you know? Seriously. I mean, well, I'd go to jail to see that happen.
let's go back to McVeigh. I just have a feeling that McVeigh was told to steal those rifles and sell them to fund it. But if not, McVeigh managed to fund it by stealing dynamite and blasting caps at Depcord and everything. For what he needed to buy, he stole some rifles, sold them. I said, you know, I don't want to advocate bank robbery. But if you have to fund something, you have to fund it. Now, on level two, when you start bringing these units together, step two of the plan, a Federal Reserve Bank becomes a target. And if you get into that bank, now that money should, once you get to the active committees of safety in step three, then that money should be turned over to the Committee of Safety to help others fund their operations. But as far as finding a method of funding, we've got it. It's there. It's sitting in wherever we need to go to get it.
Okay.
It's available in a completely different level than it was available to the founding fathers.
All right, before we go to break, Tim Turner, Lyndon LaRouche. Now, Turner is gaining momentum. He is actively recruiting the militias, mostly the militia guy units that are just like, you know, they're ready. I mean, you know, they got all these guns, they got all these bullets, and says, you know, let's do something, let's go dancing, something like that. So your thoughts on Tim Turner, Lyndon LaRouche?
After the break, or I don't know that much about Lyndon LaRouche. Turner, I've got a good idea what's happening.
Well,
I knew,
we got 5 minutes, so just to start, go with
okay.
What you got, and we'll go from there.
Okay, now let's go back to the history. There was, you did not claim yourself an officer. In fact, in the plan, there's a table that shows how many people and what the rank should be and the ranking staff. All officers are commissioned. Now, they allowed election of officers on lower levels up to captain, but those officers, once elected by their company, had to they would turn over their vote to the committee. The committee would commission him. Now, Turner is making hay because these guys, I'm general of this militia unit. Okay, well, we'll recognize you as general. So he's patting them on the back, praising them, giving them that title that they want, and they're saying, we'll go along with you. The problem is, when is Turner going to say, look, I need muster rolls for all my militia?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's going to be disaster waiting
now,
to happen.
Now, the reason I see Turner getting momentum, because you know, I'm getting emails from his groups and so forth, and they're actually having some fairly large meetings at some fairly prominent hotels with some fairly large amounts of cash, you know, transactions and so forth.
That would be nice if they can do it. I'm just apprehensive about that whole thing. I'm not sure it's what it appears to be, and only time will tell. Hey, if he starts it, we'll just pick up on the plan where it's supposed
well,
to be.
Well, that's
where we
my
start
thought. I think Turner, what Turner's trying to do And he's trying to get as many as the frustrated militia members who have just said, you know what, we're not going anywhere. The only thing that's going to make this happen is that we've got to start blowing shit up. And that's what he's working on. He's working on that anger and frustration and so forth. Okay. And I think, and Mike and I had a long discussion about it, I think that that's what his plan is to start it and so forth. Okay.
Well, if it is, and he picks the wrong target, he's going to disenfranchise people. You know, then we'll have to overcome that with a plan to restore the constitutional government. I haven't followed it. I guess I need to. If you get any interesting ones, why don't you forward them to me? I want to respond to a comment in the chat. No, Randy Mack is not connected with Tim Turner. Okay. He's not.
Okay. All right, let's go to break, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Inside their houses, we the shades pulled down. God knows we could use some romance in the sleepy bedroom town. I know you're still afraid to rush into anything. There's just so many summers, babe. Just so many springs. And this is the
Okay, we're back. Someone just tried to call in, and we can't take any calls until the last 15 minutes.
Okay, well, Snowball 1776 had a question if you want me to answer it.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, you have tread on me. In July of 2009, I wrote a petition, and I called it the You Have Tread on Me petition. Instead of don't tread on me, I figured we were past the point where we tell them not to, because in a proper tense, they've tread all over us since 1992 with Randy Weaver. I wrote the petition and called it the You Have Tread on Me Under One Banner petition. Randy, I met back then, and he did some proofreading for me on the petition, and then he grabbed the name You Have Tread on Me. I have no objection. I will not copyright anything that I do. Anything that I do, like this dissolution, declaration of dissolution of government, belongs to the people of this country, not to me. So by that token, I did not object when Randy used You Have Tread on Me, which he continues to use. Am I connected to Randy Mac? I talk with Randy Mac fairly often. I like him. He's been very helpful in reviewing things and talking ideas out with me. I'm connected with Joe Racer, too. Now, I've done about 13 radio shows with Randy Mac. This is the third one with Joe Racer. So you might say I'm a little more connected to Randy, but I don't know if that means you think that I work for Randy or Randy works for me. Neither is true, any more than Joe works for me or I work for Joe. So I realize that a lot of people have a bad taste over Randy Mac. You know, a problem we have in the Patriot community is the fact that everybody wants to stab somebody in the back, and we've got to get over that someday and realize that if we're going to win this battle against an unconstitutional government, we're only going to do it by working together. So I hope that answers your question, Snowball.
Okay.
And
all right, so let's continue on here. So here we are. We're at the end of 2010. And, you know, you were coming to the cusp of things. I mean,
let's go back to Turner just for a minute. During the break, it's something that occurred to me that in response to your question on Turner.
Uh-huh.
Let's go back in history again. Nobody was really in charge in Lexington and Concord. It was kind of haphazard. Local militia leaders were in charge of their militia, and they kind of worked together, and then they encircled Boston. Massachusetts Provincial Congress ended, John Hancock was president or chairman of that. I don't remember which his title was. But he got the Congress together, and they appointed an old soldier with a lot of experience named Artemus Ward to take command of the militia surrounding Boston. Not too long later, a couple months later, one of the delegates to the Continental Congress's name was George Washington. He was a delegate to that Congress. At that Congress, he was recommended as to be appointed by the Congress of Commander-in-Chief, or Commander of the Colonial Forces. He resigned his delegation and assumed command and went and replaced Artemus Ward around Boston. If Tim Turner thinks he's George Washington, who appointed him? Now, one of the problems we have in the patriot community is self-appointment. By what authority? That sounds like a Republican or Democratic Party where they appoint the people they want to dangle in front of you as turds. What happened back then is that there were 90 declarations of independence signed in this country before Jefferson put pen to paper. 90 of them, over 90. These came from communities, from counties, and eventually from whole colonies, long before Jefferson put pen to paper. Everything came from the bottom up. Everything must, if we are going to succeed, come from the bottom up, because if not, we open ourselves up. Let's say we get somebody like Bo Greitz, and he proclaims himself master of all. There are a lot of questions about Bo Greitz now, and they're valid questions. I don't want to go into them now, but we don't need leaders that appoint themselves. Another one would, is Michigan Militia. What was his name?
I know who you're thinking of. I can't remember his name either. But yeah.
CBS made him very important,
yeah.
And he took that role. People have to earn those and be appointed to those positions of responsibility, or we fail. My objection with the Continental Congress is the fact that they were self-appointed. You paid your dues, and then you got people that paid their dues in your state to send you to their meeting, and then they come up with this the plan that the Schultz's organization. They're self-appointed. That's not how it works, because they represent themselves. The people that come from the bottom up come from each level. For example, in militia, people that prove themselves and their capacity in the field and managing troops are the ones that should move up to major, lieutenant colonel, general, up in positions. Those have to be earned. If they're appointed, and we had a lot of problems during the Revolution with appointments, where the generals were incompetent. And Washington tried to get rid of them, and when he finally got rid of them, his army worked better. But people had worked themselves up through the ranks, like Nathaniel Greene, were some of his best generals. And we need to look the same way. People cannot appoint themselves to positions of authority or responsibility.
Well, okay, so let's step back a couple steps here. Okay, so you're right, but the self-appointing, the self-appointee, and so forth. But the thing is that, you know, again, we still don't have a civilian authority, and that's one of the things that Turner's working on. He's got himself as the elected president, whoever elected him, the vice president, and then he has a Congress and all that stuff, and they're having congressional meetings. And you remember that bullshit last year when he was going to give those letters to all the governors and have the provost marshal come in and do the arrest and so forth, which I find really amusing, since the provost marshal's authority pretty much ends the minute he steps out past the gate of any military installation and so forth. But the thing is that so he's gaining steam, he's gaining people, you know, he's gaining the militia and so forth, and he's getting the one thing is funding, okay? And that's the thing that's scary, is he's getting funding.
Be interesting to find out where that funding came from, wouldn't it?
Well, it's coming from, obviously, people that are donating and so forth, but I think, personally, he's made a deal with an outside foreign entity somewhere to basically build up his unit, his movement and so forth. And I think at one time, I mean, let's take an example. If there was a person like Tim Turner who had 10, 12, 15,000 armed individuals, how much damage could they do in the United States of America?
Probably quite a bit if the people are committed behind it, and that won't show until the time comes when people either duck and return fire or run like a son of a bitch.
Well, the whole thing is that there's not enough military presence in the United States of America to ward off. And this is the thing is that a lot of people don't understand this, is that
there's over a million law enforcement officers in continental United States.
But they all work for different groups. They all have their own agenda. They all have their own agenda.
But they can work together if there's an open confrontation. If they know that their militia is going to have 500 people here to do something, they're going to have 1,000 people, cops from whatever states, just like Waco, from 5 different ATF locations.
Right.
Miami, Florida.
And then the problem with Waco is that there wasn't, they brought 500. We should have brought 1,000, right?
Well, I think didn't we cover that on the Waco program?
We did.
Yes, it would have been nice, but then no, it wouldn't have been because the people did not want the help. The civilians didn't. They wanted John to play his hand.
And that was the stupidity of the whole thing. But the thing is that right now, the Obama administration with Eric Holder knows that something like that would be a polarizing event, so they don't want anything. They don't want to be anywhere near that.
No, there won't be another Waco. They got burned. In fact, the Murrah building fell down because of Waco.
Right. So what do you think the polarizing event would be? Other than a false flag situation. Now, here's the thing. Getting back to our conversation about North Korea, I think that there's going to be a continued amount of consternation with North Korea. I think there's going to be some nuclear event in the United States of America, probably on the West Coast or so. And I think that's going to be the thing that starts it, because they can't continue what they're doing with the Federal Reserve and quantitative easing, because right now the entire world, anybody who's got a currency that's traded on the forex or something, is extremely unhappy with us, and so something is going to happen probably in that time frame and so forth. Okay, and I think that's going to be an interesting polarizing event if there is we could say a false flag event, but let's just say that a terrorist nuke goes off in Long Beach or Los Angeles and so forth, and then Obama gets the ability to declare martial law. That's a polarizing event, but they're not going to do that unless they think that they can win and have the upper hand, right?
Well, I don't think they're going to declare martial law. They will do TSAs. You know, there's a thing on the news the other day. They're practicing in bus stations in case so they have the training to step in and do bus stations. But what they're doing is getting us used to the idea of bus stations. What people call false flags, and some may be and some are not, you know, and we don't have proof that they are. We can only speculate. But when we look at a false flag event, it's not to create confrontation. It's, if anything, to give them the means to impose greater restrictions upon us. You know, they serve a more of a political purpose.
Well, okay, so let's say checkpoints on the freeway. Checkpoints on the freeway. Here in California, we have all these way stations. All of a sudden, these way stations become checkpoints. They come in there, you know, papers, please. Are you a legal citizen? Yada yada yada. And so forth. Are you wanted by the police? This is a sobriety checkpoint. Okay, that's how it'll start. Checkpoints on the freeway.
Well, it could, and then I would like to see an active group of people then come in on the side of the freeway there, outside the fence, in a good secure position with a little elevation. And a couple people with 50 calibers ready to shoot at helicopters if necessary, and start laying a concentration of fire on the checkpoint.
Let's take a phone call. I'm going to put you on hold and take this call. He keeps calling, all right? Hold on.
Okay.
707, you're on the air. 707, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I'm calling. I'm trying to listen in on Gary Hunt's discussion, but I can't really get the computer to put the show on for me. But I just wanted to say that I know Gary Hunt. My name is Peter, and he's one of the smartest guys I've met in this country. And it's time, I believe, without a doubt, for us to have a nice, big, beautiful general strike. Shuts down the labor in schools and shows D.C. and the world where nobody's fools. And a strike that will put the entire D.C. to its knees. And I'm hoping I could figure out how to get this show on my computer, but it won't. I'm not getting any sound.
You might want to do a refresh, because I hear an echo right now. So something is working and so forth. But thanks for the call. page, Mike Freebird. He can help you out and get in this thing live, okay?
All right, thanks.
All right. Let's get Gary back on here. I'm going to go through all the Skype stuff here. Gary, you back?
I'm here.
Yeah, that guy said that you were the smartest guy he's ever heard.
Well, Peter Chernoff goes way back. 1993 in February, I had started publishing Outposts on Freedom newspaper, and I published a couple articles about Satanic ritual, Project Monarch, and all that. And then one evening we were drinking in my office, my employees and some friends, and there was a knock on the door, and I went to the door. And he said, can I talk to you outside? It was dark, just getting dark, and I went outside, and he said, I'm Peter Chernoff. I just got here from California. I can't think of the girl's name. She said I could trust you, but we're on the run. The FBI's after me. So I said, just a minute, get back in the car. He got in the car. I went in and told everybody they had to leave. Good night. They left. He came in and explained his story. He had taken his son away from satanic ritual-based situation in California. He wasn't married to the mother, but he was recognized as the father, and he brought him out there, and he came with his girlfriend. Our security team was in place at the time. We had Peter and his son and his girlfriend until his girlfriend decided to come out and go back to California and try and work some things.
Uh-huh.
And Peter decided to come out later. The FBI had come to my office looking for him. We managed to keep him away from the FBI and keep him secured, protect his son and everything with the security team very successfully. Now, I can talk about it now because when he finally signed a plea agreement years later, many months later, back in California, the U.S. attorney or the state attorney, whoever it was on the other side, one of the provisions in the agreement would be most no other prosecutions as a result of him fleeing. Mm-hmm. And so we're clean. We're immune now.
What was
now
he fleeing from?
Who's that? Aquino, the colonel in the army.
Uh-huh.
Miss Sandy's daycare center. These are ones that are associated with satanic ritual abuse. I don't know how valid the story is. When I went out to California to investigate it, I found that Aquino was on the board of the Miss Sandy's daycare center. I have trouble with names. I'm getting old, but a guy and a girl that traveled around the country talking about this, in talking with him, he wrote Project Monarch, and he affirmed that Keno does have ties and that these ties are probably there. I couldn't find the evidence, but I was only out there for 2 weeks. But there seems to be legitimacy to what Peter was saying. And so he wanted his son away from that, so he was charged with kidnapping his own son. But like I say, he wasn't married, didn't have custodial rights.
Yeah.
He gave himself up, eventually George Sibley and Linda Lyon kept his son after Peter turned himself in, and then Peter told them where he was, so the police came to George and Linda's house, which was kind of an interesting story because the cops were in there with their guns on searching the place, and one of them looked at George and said, you know, I don't feel very comfortable you wearing that pistol on your side. And George says, you're in my house, and I don't feel very comfortable with you wearing that pistol on your side. And that was the end of the conversation.
Uh-huh.
But that's Peter. That goes back to 93, or February of 93 that I've known Peter.
So, okay, so we should try to get this question answered here. So has anybody got the answer, or have I got you guys this time? Come on. You know what the number is. 209-379-4339. I got you guys good. Come on. Who's got it? No, not Ronald Reagan. Come on, call in with the answer.
No, it's not Fuck You Joe either.
Huh?
It's not Fuck You Joe either. I don't know who he is.
So Mike, do I get the gift if I get these guys? That's a nice flash.
Can I answer the question?
No, you can't answer the question because I told you.
Oh. Well,
and you know, Harley asked the same thing. She promised not to tell, but you know what? I don't know. I didn't believe her. But the thing is that, come on. Well, no, it's not Bush. No one made. No, two movies about Bush. Okay, we got 10 minutes. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I want to say hi to the G-Man. I noticed he's got his own radio program, and he came to listen to yours, which means that some of the barriers are down. Welcome, G-Man.
Yeah.
But I think that we need to look at people like Turner with a degree of skepticism. If he proves his case, and you know, when we begin putting together our civil authority and we want to embrace him, then he should be embraced if he's proven himself.
Yeah.
But like George Washington, he needs to understand that when that civilian or that civil authority comes into power, he has to submit to it. Otherwise, he's a warlord.
You're right, and that's exactly what he's doing. But the thing is, he's a warlord who's getting quite a bit of a following, and obviously getting some funding because everything is stepping up a notch, and so forth. And you know, I don't know how big of an army he plans to gather and garner, but you know, if he's the one, in my mind, if he's the one that's going to do the first strike and so forth, then the rest of us sit back and just watch it all happen, and then, you know, when it's all said and done, come in there and do what we're supposed to do. But the interesting thing is that some of the conversation we had about, you know, active aggravation and so forth, we need to continue that. Okay, someone wants to hear the question, so I'll give the question one more time. Okay, this is a statement made by a person, is that, "It's a great compliment to me to have two movies about me with two great actors, and they still fucked the deal up." Not Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp was dead when they made the movies about Wyatt Earp. So,
let's go back to an incident in 1994. The Adjutant General of the United States Militia, a.k.a. Lawyer Linda Thompson, wanted to start the National Militia. I was up in South Bend, Indiana, staying with a friend, and she was putting out the call through the fax networks and through her radio program and everything, that call this number and sign up for the militia. You call the number. They want your name, address, phone number, email address, all this information about you, how many are in your militia and all this, and somebody will contact you. So the friend I was staying with, his name's Dave, he called and left the information. 3 years later, he had never heard back. Now, we wondered if she was compiling a list. And I've got a recording of his conversation with the mechanical, the answering machine on the other side, and him leaving the information. But, you know, because of that, I guess because of that history 16 years ago, that when I see somebody on a national level, like somebody else asked me about the other day, if he ask for a muster roll from all the militia leaders, that's the time to abandon him. Mm. Because if the government, if you read C3CM, if you do a search on Google, C3CM, numeral 3, and then space outpost, you'll get the article. The government has the three-stage list, 9 different categories. Mm. And if you're on that muster roll and he is a bad guy, you will go to the top of the list, and when the government does crack down, what they're going to do is they're going to crack down like they do on a drug bust. You know, if they've got a national drug bust, they'll hit San Francisco at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they'll be hitting New York at 11 o'clock in the morning so that there's no communication. That's the same time. And they'll go to the people on the list that they think are leaders, and they're going to grab them all within an hour, all the ones they can reach within an hour. So if you get on that list, when they get your level, you can expect that you won't have a chance to call your buddy to protect you because they're going to be at his front door at the same time that they're at yours.
Well, that's
which
the rumor.
Which is why
we
have to take the initiative.
Well, I think that the next time that you and I communicate, we're going to have to cover that smart. Okay. So who wants to know the answer? Now, Gary can't tell you because I told Gary, so he can't get the price because he wanted to know. So I told him. So
I will admit I never would have guessed it.
Okay. Come on now. Someone's got to get it. Come on. See, I had one 2 weeks ago, and a guy who was a student of Mark Twain, it was a statement Mark Twain said, where he said that people spend way too much emphasis on sex and not enough on defecation. And the guy got it. I didn't think they were going to get it, but he was a student of Mark Twain.
Well,
no, it's not Alan Ladd.
Let me give a hint. In my discussion in the last 5 minutes, between me and something that I said, you can get about 85% of the answer.
Okay, what was that?
Well, my name is Gary Hunt.
Yeah.
And I was talking about the Adjutant General of the United States Militia.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give him the answer. The answer is
stop there.
Yeah, the answer. Okay, the answer. Oh. Dr. Hunter Thompson. That's correct. Right before he died, about 3 months before he died, and he was talking to some obscure rag or something like that. And he's talking about the two movies. They did two movies. Bill Murray did one, and John Depp did another. And Craig says, "Who the hell is Hunter Thompson?" Well, you know what? You need to go out there and go read some of Hunter Thompson's stuff. Like,
he's probably one of the most sarcastic writers you've ever read.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the guy he hated everybody.
He hated everybody equally. That was the beauty of Hunter Thompson. Yeah. He hated everybody equally. And if you follow Hunter Thompson, the guy was amazing. Anyway, we're pretty much out of time. Gary, you know what? It's always a pleasure having you on, and we're going to have to continue this conversation pretty soon, because I think we're running out of time here. I think the Schummer's going to hit the oscillator in 6 weeks or so, and I don't know. I think all bets are going to be off come January, but we'll find out. But one of the things I think that we need to, and I need the audience and everybody here listening, says, look, if we're ever going to make this happen, if we're not going to go through the Red Dawn scenario, which we're fast approaching, is that we need to get all of the militia units and all of the patriots together on the same page and start coming and culling some ideas about how we can get a civilian authority that the militia members can report to, because it's not going to work without that. We can't handle Lyndon LaRouche because Lyndon's got his way of fixing things, and we can't have the Tim Turners, okay? So we need to come up with some ideas, and Gary's got a lot of ideas, and the thing is that they're ideas, okay? It's not an absolute solution because there's no such thing as an absolute solution. The Constitution is not an absolute solution. It was a solution that worked well for 13 colonies 235-odd years ago, but you know what? There are some holes in it that aren't working too well today, okay? So these are the things we need to think about. And what we need to think as intellectual, first and foremost, and then as a gunnery sergeant, second. Would you not agree?
I agree absolutely. In fact, you know, most of the patriot organizations have somebody in charge of them, and there's two things that they do well. They think and they do.
Yeah.
They think because they thought up the idea. They do because they produce something out of it. Yeah. Those are the type of people that we need to look to for leadership, but that leadership can't be determined by the thinkers and doers. It has to be done collectively by a larger number of people to pick the best. Everybody thinks they're the best at what they do.
Yeah.
And so they have to submit to the subjectivity of a larger group who says that, yes, these can do it.
Yeah.
These are the ones that we think can do it. Now, if they don't, they need to be, you know, once they're picked based on their history, if they don't produce, then you kick them out and bring somebody else in. That's the way it works.
Yeah. All right, Gary, we're out of time. Thank you. Thank you. And listen, guys, I don't know if we're going to have a show Thursday. It is, after all, Thanksgiving, and I am responsible for cooking the bird. So it's kind of on the fence with me. But if we don't have a show, have a great Thanksgiving. You know, it's one of my favorite holidays. Gary, you have a great Thanksgiving. All right.
And thank you all for listening.
Thank you all for listening. And then we'll reconvene next week. Man,
right. Ooh, there's a fever, fever, feeling like that. That's right, you got to deal with it. Deal with it, got to deal with it. Deal with it, you got to deal with it. Got to deal with it.
your mind.